Laudato Jesus Christus. This is the English program of Vatican Radio.
Hello, and thank you for joining me on this edition of the English program. I'm Linda Bordoni, and I'll be with you for the next half hour. As always, we'll be joining Jill Bevilacqua, who presents the weekly reflection, There's More in the Sunday Gospel Than Meets the Eye, with readings by Sean Patrick Lovett. But first, we look back on Pope Francis's just concluded apostolic visit to Poland, and we hear from Lydia O'Kane, who has been in Krakow reporting on the journey and speaking to all sorts of people there. Sunday, the 31st of July, marked the last day of Pope Francis's five-day visit to Poland, his 15th apostolic journey abroad, during which he met the Polish clergy, paid tribute to the Black Madonna of Czestochowa in the Jasna Góra Shrine, spent time with the sick and the poor, prayed at the Sanctuary of Divine Mercy, and visited the Nazi concentration camps of Auschwitz and Birkenau. The Pope also participated in World Youth Day celebrations with a series of events that saw the presence of millions of young people. As per tradition, at the end of the conclusive Mass for World Youth Day, the Pope announced the venue and the date for the next such event. But let's let Lydia O'Kane tell us more.
As the sun came up at the Campus Misericordia on Sunday morning, the many thousands of pilgrims who had remained in these grounds overnight prepared themselves for the final Mass of this World Youth Day. Pope Francis was entering this camp for the second time in 24 hours, and as he travelled through this field greeting the sea of youth, the Israeli singer Noah gave a rendition of the Ave Verum and the Ave Maria. Following an intense week of prayer, reflection and events, the Holy Father made his way to the altar for the last time here in Krakow, bathed in the glorious image of Jesus' divine mercy. The patrons of this World Youth Day and symbols of God's mercy, St. John Paul II and St. Faustina Kowalska, were also remembered. The Pope's homily at this closing Mass was one of encouragement to the hundreds of thousands of young people who had come from all over the world for this event. He told them that no one is insignificant. God counts on you for what you are, not for what you possess. The Pope explained to them that their real stature was their spiritual identity. At times in our lives, we aim lower rather than higher, the Holy Father noted, but God is always cheering us on. He is our biggest fan. Pope Francis urged the young pilgrims here to be courageous, not to be afraid to take risks, not to be discouraged if people laugh because they believe in the gentle and unassuming power of mercy. The Pope concluded his homily with this message, World Youth Day begins today and continues tomorrow in your homes, since that is where Jesus wants to meet you from now on. And then it was time for one of the high points of the celebration, the announcement of the venue for the next World Youth Day. With joy, the Holy Father revealed that this 2019 youth meeting would take place in Panama with these words. The providence of God always precedes us. Just think that it has already decided the next milestone in this great pilgrimage started in 1985 by St. John Paul II. And therefore, I announce with joy that the next World Youth Day, after the two diocesan ones, will be in 2019 in Panama City. It was then left to the next host of this event to lead the festivities, which they did in style. Panama pilgrims, along with the country's president, erupted with joy and cheering, and the country's distinctive blue, white and red starred flags took pride of place on the stage here at the Campus Misericordia. As Panama fever took hold, bishops and nuns danced with pilgrims as the youth of this country invited their fellow participants to join them there in 3 years' time to celebrate their faith and be witnesses to Christ's love. With Pope Francis in Krakow, I'm Lydia O'Kane.
As I mentioned in the lead-up to the conclusive World Youth Day Mass in Krakow's Campus Misericordiae, Pope Francis participated in a series of different events connected to World Youth Day, which took place this year under the theme of mercy. Those included a welcome ceremony, a Stations of the Cross event, a passage through a holy door with a group of young people, the rite of reconciliation, and the sharing of a meal. At lunch with a dozen young people serving as volunteers for World Youth Day on Saturday, the Pope told them they should never lose hope. The young people invited to join the Pope for lunch came from all different continents and included representatives from New Zealand, Zimbabwe, Italy, Colombia, as well as the host nation Poland. Each one of them was able to ask Pope Francis a question, to which he replied with the help of an interpreter. Raviro Tnonda Karidza from Zimbabwe spoke to Lydia O'Kane after the lunch to share her excitement and talk about the Pope's words to the youth.
I've been to World Youth Days, this is my third one, but I just went home and my mom was like, okay, as usual, you're going to go. And I'm like, okay, let's go. I get here and then they tell me 2 days ago or 3 days ago, you're having lunch with the Pope. I think I did not believe it until today when he walked in. I was like, wait, I'm on the other side of the security. So clearly this is happening. It was amazing. I can't even describe it.
Tell me, what were his words to you? What did he say?
He had something that I didn't know. The Pope is very humble. He had so many words to say. You'll be surprised how many questions he was able to answer because they're all coming from different continents. So clearly we all have different aspects to life. I'm from Africa. We have different cases. So some people were asking, what is prayer? People were asking, what's your hope? I think the most touching word that he gave was that, I think Fatima asked, what is your hope for the youth? And then he says, my hope is that you never lose that hope that you have already. So for us as young people, you realize that you have so much in your hands. He really does look up to us, you know. Everyone always says, you're the church of tomorrow, you know, in the streets. But when the Pope actually tells you, it's like, okay, I am the future of tomorrow. And we asked about confession. What is prayer? He gave something that we've never heard. Even the cardinal was with us, was surprised. He's like, wow, you just introduced something. He said prayer, he called it the Trinitism. When you're saying you're praying, you have to communicate with the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit all together. And also to know that you're in the presence of that one person that loves you the most. So for me, I think that was maybe the three things that I got really from that lunch.
What do you want to bring back to people in Zimbabwe? What message do you want to bring back from here?
I wish I could bring the Pope himself and tell them the words, but I will try. You know, I had an experience to say that I'm Zimbabwean, but I'm in school in Russia. So the coincidence was that my parish priest is a Pope's friend. So you can imagine. So I have two messages. I have a message for Zimbabweans. I asked questions based on Zimbabwe and Russia. So in Zimbabwe, I asked, we have a lot of divisions. You have, like, let's say you have scandals with the parish priests. You know that for years, you know rumors move around. You know the scandal of the parish priest. But you were saying, because you had said confession is when you, the difference between confession with the priest and the confession with the person is that the priest acts as the image of God. So I asked, if you're saying is the image of God, and I probably know at the back of my head that this priest has some scandal going on, how do you expect me to then go to that person and see him as the image of God and be able to make my confession? He said, I cannot give you the right answers. All I can tell you is that it's difficult, but find a better priest and just pray. Then I asked him about the Russia situation to say, you know, we have so many Catholics who, you know, go to the Pentecostal churches and stuff. He just said prayer. So at the end of the day, I think the most we can do, tell everyone to just pray.
Always part of a papal voyage, as part of his closest entourage, is Father Federico Lombardi, the director of the Holy See Press Office. He is present at all the events, also so that he can brief the press at the end of each busy day. He spoke to Lydia O'Kane about the Pope's message for young people.
This World Youth Day is in the context of the Jubilee of the Mercy. And every event, every moment of this World Youth Day is connected very profoundly to this message. And in this sense, in the morning we are visiting the two sanctuaries where the concrete experience of the mercy was coming in the past century to us through two big witnesses, Saint Faustina and Saint John Paul II. And in this sense, in the morning we meet the two most important witnesses of the mercy of God in and of the message of the mercy here in Krakow, in their home. And then with the vigil, there is also a new important step for all the young people to learn from these two big witnesses and from the Pope that is presenting them the message of the mercy of God, how to find the way to an enthusiastic transformation of their life in witnesses of the mercy of God through their life. The World Youth Day is also a way. Through the different steps of this way, the young people learn how to transform concretely their life in a living witness of the mercy of God, and in their daily life through their concrete actions.
So Pope Francis will be leaving a powerful legacy of faith and hope in the people of Poland and in the millions of young people gathered in Krakow for this 31st World Youth Day. Apart from his prayers, his encouragement and his closeness, his words of hope and his tears of sorrow, he also left two houses for the poor and the elderly in need. Through the work and intervention of Caritas Poland and Caritas Internationalis, headed by Cardinal Luis Tagle, two solid centres made of bricks and cement are a concrete witness of solidarity for the poor on the part of the Pope, who blessed them on Sunday morning before their inauguration. Cardinal Tagle spoke to Lydia O'Kane about this charitable initiative, but also about the seeds of hope each World Youth Day manages to sow.
This has been the mark of papal visits, like, for example, in the Philippines, when the Pope visited last year. The Pope also gave, aside from the gift of his presence, the gift of his fatherly presence, also gave a gift that would stay, would remain, and would benefit especially the poor. And that's the same thing that's happening here, especially because this World Youth Day is very much tied to the Year of Mercy. And the theme is be merciful as the Father is merciful. And so aside from the festivities, aside from the obvious joy that the coming together of young people always generates, there is also here a very great manifestation of love and mercy. And the Holy Father, in the name of the youth, is giving this gift, two centers for the poor, Caritas centers.
Just very briefly, Cardinal Tagle, what have you been your impressions so far of this visit and the Pope's words?
Well, you know, every World Youth Day is unique. It has a way of sowing seeds of love and also a sense of service to humanity. But this year, because of the theme of mercy, the call for the young people to be protagonists in constructing a world that is destroyed by lack of mercy, to take their vocation seriously. They should not be timid. As the Pope said, they should not behave like they are in retirement mode. They're just beginning. So and the way I express it in my catechesis is for the young people to appreciate the gift of youth, energy, zest, idealism, you know, the capacity to dream, and to bring all of those not for self-promotion and not just for the fulfillment of myself, but for the service of humanity and of a better world. And so we hope through concrete engagement, you know, in acts of mercy, then we hope the world will be much better, you know, especially in the years to come when these young people would have been adults and parents themselves and business people and politicians.
And now we join Jill Bevilacqua, who produced and presented There's More in the Sunday Gospel Than Meets the Eye.
Someone in the crowd said to Jesus, "Teacher, tell my brother to give me my share of our inheritance." He replied, "Friend, who has set me up as your judge or arbiter?" Then he said to the crowd, "Avoid greed in all its forms. A man may be wealthy, but his possessions do not guarantee him life." He told them a parable in these words. "There was a rich man who had a good harvest. 'What shall I do?' he asked himself. 'I have no place to store my harvest.' 'I know,' he said. 'I will pull down my grain bins and build larger ones. All my grain and my goods will go there. Then I will say to myself, "You have blessings in reserve for years to come. Relax, eat heartily, drink well, enjoy yourself.' But God said to him, 'You fool, this very night your life shall be required of you. To whom will all this piled-up wealth of yours go?' That is the way it works with the man who grows rich for himself instead of growing rich in the sight of God."
From the quiet intimacy of last week's Gospel, when Jesus is alone with his apostles, teaching them how to pray, we now find him in the midst of an immense crowd, as St. Luke writes.
"Meanwhile, the people had gathered in their thousands, so that they were treading on one another, and he began to speak, first of all, to his disciples."
And it's almost as if this attention to his immediate followers makes the crowd impatient, so that one man plucks up courage and provokes Jesus with a totally irrelevant personal question. "Tell my brother to give me my share of our inheritance." Irrelevant for us, perhaps, but not for the people in that crowd, as Piero Bargellini explains.
The Jews often turn to the rabbis, teachers of religious doctrine, to make judgments also on practical matters, legal, even administrative problems. The man in the crowd believed that Jesus, too, could help him settle his very personal problem of a controversial inheritance which a brother, it seems, would not share with him.
There were very clear rules laid down regarding inheritance. Women were disregarded, as we're told in a guidebook on life in Bible times.
The right of inheritance followed the male. If an Israelite had only daughters and wanted to preserve his family inheritance, his daughters had to marry within their tribe because the inheritance could not be transferred to another tribe.
And the firstborn son was particularly favoured, for when the father died, he received a double portion of the family inheritance. Interesting when we remember the parable of the prodigal son. The fury of the elder son, when the father kills the fatted calf on his brother's return, seems even more out of place. His double share of the inheritance was sure, and his father confirms this when he says, "All I have is yours." Certainly, brothers in the Bible, whether in parable or in reality, seem frequently to have been at odds. And there's surely nothing more likely to produce dissension than a question of inheritance. Even more so when the inheritance is large, as Francis Bacon warned in 1612. "A great estate left to an heir is as a lure to all the birds of prey round about to seize on him, if he be not the better established in years and judgment." Jesus, while refusing to enter into discussion of a man's family affairs, uses the occasion to preach once more on the true values, on the need to pursue spiritual rather than material wealth, as a scholar notes.
It is not Jesus' task to decide on the division of material goods among men. He always aims at the inner conversion of a man, from a convinced heart, detached from unreal and deceptive material riches, will spring the solid virtues of justice and charity.
Avoid greed in all its forms. Greed, or covetousness, one of the seven deadly or capital sins, and explained as an excessive love of riches and earthly goods. According to Henri Nouwen, Belgian writer on spirituality, anger and greed are the two main enemies of the spiritual life.
When my sense of self depends on what I can acquire, greed flares up when my desires are frustrated.
In the 4th century, St. Augustine warned in his work De Agone Christiano, or Christian Combat.
The devil rules over lovers of temporal goods belonging to this visible world, not because he is lord of this world, but because he is ruler of those covetous desires by which we long for all that passes away.
People in the Middle Ages were very conscious of the power of the devil, and both artists and poets depicted hell and the torments of its inmates in graphic detail. None more vividly than Dante. In Canto 7 of his Inferno, he imagines hoarders and misers condemned to roll immense boulders from one side of the fourth circle of hell towards the other side, until they collide with those of the spendthrifts rolling theirs in the opposite direction.
Some left, some right, who yelled out as they rolled these great weights with their chests to make advance. They crashed together, turned and slowly bowled their weights back round. And then they boom. Why niggard gold? To hear, why squander gold? So they return along their circuit's gloom, in their first tracks towards the other side. And turning there, the same reproach resume. And having done so, then again divide, return along the same half-circle's curve, until the next joust comes, and they collide.
And to the horrified Dante, his companion, the Latin poet Virgil, comments.
Now, my son, see to what a mock are brought the goods of fortune's keeping, and how soon, though to possess them still is all man's thought, for all the gold there is beneath the moon, or ever was, could never offer rest to one of these drawn souls who sought that boon.
Our Lord paints no such picture of punishment, but puts his teaching in a parable his listeners could understand. To have a good harvest would make any farmer or landowner happy, but this man's harvest is such that he needs to build bigger barns in order to house it all. What's more, he feels so secure that he decides to take it easy and enjoy life. But there's something he's forgotten. We all know the old adage, "Eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die." It's a variation of a phrase of Isaiah, "Let us eat and drink, for tomorrow we shall die." It was a traditional saying of the Egyptians, we're told, who at their banquets exhibited a skeleton to the guests to remind them of the brevity of life. Our rich man of the parable has forgotten his Isaiah and is perhaps remembering a slightly different scriptural motto from Ecclesiastes.
A man hath no better thing under the sun than to eat and to drink and to be merry.
Carpe diem, seize the day, was the constant theme of the old Persian poet Omar Khayyam.
Ah, make the most of what we yet may spend, before we too into the dust descend. Ah, fill the cup, what boots it to repeat how time is slipping underneath our feet.
But Khayyam is well aware of the tenuous quality of material goods.
The The worldly hope men set their hearts upon turns ashes, or it prospers, and anon, like snow upon the desert's dusty face, lighting a little hour or two, is gone. And those who husbanded the golden grain, and those who flung it to the winds like rain, alike to no such aureate earth are turned as, buried once, men want dug up again.
Jesus ends his parable with the sobering words of God, who tells the man that his life, which he was going to enjoy, will be required of him that very night. And to whom will all this piled-up wealth of yours go? How hard it is for the rich to enter the kingdom of God, Jesus would say, surely with a sigh, when the rich young man turned away, unable to renounce his great wealth. And as William Caxton, who printed the first book in English, put it, riches increase avarice in a covetous man. Another popular phrase, money is the root of all evil, is taken from St. Paul's first letter to Timothy, when he wrote, the love of money is the root of all evils. And Chaucer, in his Canterbury Tales, has the pardoner say,
I preach for nothing but for greed of gain, and use the same old text, as bold as brass, radix malorum est cupiditas.
Cupiditas, cupidity, covetousness, greed, avarice. Call it what you will. Whether or not it is the root of all evils, it is certainly an insidious plant. St. Ambrose, in one of his letters, wrote,
happy is the man who has been able to cut out the root of vices, avarice. What do superfluous riches profit in this world when they do not assist our birth or impede our dying? We are born into this world naked. We leave it without a cent. We are buried without our inheritance.
The parable Jesus recounted in today's Gospel was not the last he was to tell on the subject. Later came that of Dives and Lazarus. And before he came to Jerusalem, he passed through Jericho, where the tax collector Zacchaeus made a dramatic U-turn. For, as a biblical scholar comments,
with Jesus has arrived the moment of salvation. The love of God goes out to sinners, and conversion leads to indifference to wealth and to charity through joy.
When Jesus entered the house of Zacchaeus, the Pharisees murmured their disapproval. What was their reaction, one may wonder, when this public sinner made the great renunciation, the radical change of life? Some, perhaps, were convinced. Others may well have been sceptical or even laughed. As Dickens in A Christmas Carol wrote, when the miser Scrooge was converted from his grasping ways. It's the same story, really.
He became as good a friend, as good a master, and as good a man as the good old city knew. Some people laughed to see the alteration in him, but he let them laugh, and little heeded them, for he was wise enough to know that nothing ever happened on this globe for good, at which some people did not have their fill of laughter in the outset. And knowing that such as these would be blind anyway, he thought it quite as well that they should wrinkle up their eyes in grins as have the malady in less attractive forms. His own heart laughed, and that was quite enough for him.
That's all from the English feature programme. I'm Linda Bordoni. Thank you so much for listening. To find out more about our programming, you can go to our website at rv.va. You're listening to Vatican Radio's English programme. Laudetur Jesus Christus.